suits, but I'm more interested in the guy rocking Dockers. One of Wayne Gibson's arms is hanging in a sling across his chest. That must be the arm I shot at the facility the night Milo died and Cat escaped. Despite his injury and casual attire, he's clearly the most powerful guy in the room. Behind the man is a wall of windows. We're on the 86th floor, facing south. With a good pair of binoculars, I could probably see my house in New Jersey. I feel an unexpected twinge in a part of my brain that's been long neglected. For a moment, I actually miss my mother. The boardroom is Irene Diamond Eaton's natural element. She'd know exactly how to handle these assholes. A silver fox in a dashing charcoal suit comes toward me, hand stretched out to shake. "So glad you could come," he says. "I'm Lawrence Bennett. Will Mr. Semenoff be joining us as well?" "By video chat," I tell him. "Here's the number to call." I hand him a scrap of paper. "Ah," says Bennett, looking down at it. "I see." He's pissed. If there's one thing I know, it's angry old white dudes. I lived with one for 18 years. I take a seat across from Bennett and his fellow aging Ken dolls. They each introduce themselves, and I don't bother remembering the names. When it's time for Wayne to speak, he grins.
"No need for introductions. Mr. Eaton and I are old friends," he says.
"I shot him," I tell the men. "I'd shoot him again right now, if I could." Wayne laughs, but there's no reaction from the company's board members. Their faces remain perfectly blank. It's as if I never uttered a word. Are they human? I wonder. My discomfort is growing. I look around the room. The world seems much clearer than it has in days.
"Shall we get Mr. Semenoff on the phone?" Bennett asks.
"Yes," I say. Alexei may be a complete dick, but these guys are giving me the willies. A screen lowers at one end of the room. The phone rings three times. The screen lights up. Stationed in front of the camera is a taxidermied bear, its mouth open in a ferocious, silent roar.
"Hello,"
Alexei greets the boardroom from off camera.
"How is everyone this morning?"
The board members exchange befuddled glances.
"Mr. Semenoff, this is highly irregular."
Bennett leads towards a microphone that's embedded in the wooden table.
"How can we be certain we're speaking to you? Perhaps you are not aware that there is software that can replicate your voice. It's available on the dark web. Anyone could get his hands on it."
"Maybe,"
says Alexei. And although I can't see him, I know he said it with a shrug.
"But no one can get their hands on my Mishka. Putin and I shot him on vacation in Kazil. He is famous. I'm sure you have the technology to verify his identity. Or does your facial recognition software not work on bears?"
I'm no big fan of Alexei's, but sometimes it's impossible to dislike him.
"This is absolutely bizarre," mutters one of the board members. "Perhaps we should reschedule this meeting for a time when you're able to be with us in person," says Bennett. "As you all know, following Milo Yolkin's unfortunate suicide yesterday, I purchased a great deal of the company's stock at very reasonable prices. I saved your corporation, gentlemen. Offending me would not be wise," says Alexei. "If my feelings get hurt and I dump my shares on the market, the company's stock will hit rock bottom. Your operation may not be able to recover from a plunge like that, but I'm sure none of this is news to you. That's why we're all here today, is it not?"
"It is indeed," Wayne finally says. "What is it you want from us?"
"The boy," says Alexei.
Wayne looks around at the other members of the board and chuckles.
Sorry, the boy? What boy?"
Does this douchebag think we're complete idiots? Does he think we'll play his stupid games?
"Declan Andrews," I snarl.
"Gorog." "Ah, yes. That boy," says Wayne, addressing the bear.
He's not planning to make this easy.
May I ask why you want him?
That's none of your business, I tell him. Hand him over by the end of the day or the company's stock won't be worth the paper you wiped your ass on this morning. The members of the board shift uncomfortably in their seats, but Wayne appears unperturbed.
Son, I don't believe I was speaking to you.
He doesn't even bother to look at me. He's talking to the fucking bear.
Mr. Semenov is a businessman. He's made a significant investment in the company, and I imagine he'd like to see it pay off. Now, we may not be able to grant his first request, but I have a feeling we might be able to find a way to satisfy his true desires. Mr. Semenov, we both know that you aren't here for a 13-year-old boy. What is it that you really want?
There's silence on the other end of the call. The bear stares us all down with its amber-colored glass eyes. I keep my clenched fists hidden beneath the table. I have no idea what Alexei's going to say next.
A disc without bugs, he tells them.
Shit.
Fine, says Wayne. Consider it done. What?
I blurt out.
I want the only debugged disc,
Alexei adds. Wayne smiles.
That's a bit trickier, Mr. Semenov, but we can assure you that you'll be the only person in Otherworld with one. Let us use the technology for different projects, and we'll be able to sweeten the financial aspects of this deal considerably.
He's promising something they can't deliver, I tell Alexei. They don't know how to fix the disc. Milo Jokin is dead. There's no one at the company now who can do it.
And you think you can, Mr. Eaton?
Wayne asks, sounding perfectly cool and in control.
Of course not, Alexei replies for me. He knows someone.
Wayne chuckles.
Mr. Semenov, as I'm sure you're aware, the company is the most successful tech corporation on Earth. We employ the finest engineers and developers in the world. As we speak, our most brilliant employees are on the brink of debugging the disk. Who do you think is most capable of delivering the product you've requested? Us, or a homeless juvenile delinquent?
You have no idea, I start to say, but Alexei speaks over me.
Mr. Eden says there is only one man capable of fixing the disk, the man who invented the technology. He says he knows where to find him. James Agubu?
Wayne scoffs.
Have you met him? No, Alexei admits. Of course not. No one's seen James in ages. He's dead, for all we know. James Agubu is not dead, Alexei replies. I have it on very good authority that he has been seen in Otherworld.
Wayne chuckles as if he's just uncovered the source of a misunderstanding.
You mean an avatar that looks like James Agubu has been spotted in Otherworld, he says. I've only been to Otherworld once myself, but from what I recall, you can build an avatar that looks like pretty much anyone.
I have to admit, this asshole makes a good argument. Even though I know he's wrong, I'm struggling to find the words to make my case. It's not an imposter, Alexei. I can hear the desperation in my own voice. I sound as sweaty as I'm probably starting to look. Trust me.
Yes, by all means. Trust him, Wayne agrees. There's no doubt that James Agubu has the mind and the skills to fix the disc. If Mr. Eaton manages to produce him in the real world, you'd be a fool not to offer him your allegiance. But until then, why not allow the company to keep the boy and continue our work? We're close to a breakthrough. We could have a safe disc in a matter of days. I can promise right now that you'll not only get the first one, you'll also be able to profit from the company's latest venture. If our calculations are correct, it could add billions to your fortune.
Alexei, you can't listen.
Shush, the Russian orders me. Never turn down a deal until you know what it is. What is your latest venture, Mr. Gibson? It's something we call Other Earth, Wayne says. We were planning to give you a demonstration, but I'm afraid it requires that you be here with us in person. Perhaps we could schedule...
No, says Alexei. I'm not interested in the demonstration. Give it to him.
Everyone's eyes shift in my direction. Him means me.
I'm not sure that's the best idea.
Wayne's cool is starting to crack.
I didn't ask you what you thought of my idea,
Alexei responds testily.
Give Mr. Eaton the demonstration.
Suddenly, things aren't going Wayne's way either. Alexei's reactions aren't easy to predict. Wayne's smile is a bit tighter now.
Fine. Then let's bring in our engineer.
He leans over to Bennett.
Larry, would you mind?
The other man hops up as if God himself had just whispered in his ear. Bennett walks down to the conference room door, opens it, and ushers in my good friend, Todd. My least favorite engineer may be dressed in a suit for his big presentation, but he's still, unmistakably, bro. Todd glances at the screen and does a comical double take when he sees Alexei's bear. Then he spots me, and his eyes nearly pop out of his head.
What the f- Yes, I believe you know Mr. Eaton as well, Wayne cuts him off. He'll be the one demoing Other Earth today.
Mr. Gibson, do you really think-
Todd starts again.
Yes, I really do, Wayne says coldly.
Todd doesn't look thrilled by the state of affairs, but the engineer does as he's told. I guess blindly following orders has gotten to be a habit by now. I look forward to hearing him try to offer that defense at his trial. Todd hands me a pair of black glasses that look perfectly ordinary. They're much more streamlined than the augmented reality glasses Elvis assembled. The sides are wider than usual, I suppose, but not so much that they draw attention. Then Todd clicks a button on a remote and a second screen lowers at the other end of the room.
Put the glasses on, he orders me. Say please,
I hear Alexei say.
Mr. Eaton is my personal representative. There's no need to be rude.
Put the glasses on, please,
Todd corrects himself. He takes a seat beside me and places a tablet computer on the tabletop in front of him. I put the glasses on. They are perfectly clear. I glance over at the screen Todd just lowered. The image projected on it is my point of view.
Who's your favorite actress, Mr. Semenoff?
Wayne asks.
Judi Dench,
Alexei answers with a yawn.
She brought M to life in a way no one else could. The Bond films without her have all been crap.
When Wayne laughs, the board decides to laugh, too.
Yes, she's wonderful, but perhaps there's someone you've always found irresistibly attractive.
Judi Dench,
Alexei insists. I don't know him that well, but he certainly sounds sincere. Once again, he's making it hard not to like him.
Then, Dame Judi it is, Wayne says.
Todd types into his tablet, and suddenly, Judi Dench is standing in the room with me, wearing a shimmering gown that would look right at home on the Oscars red carpet. I take the glasses off, and she's gone. I put them on again, and she's back.
Say hello to my friend, Mr. Eaton, he tells her.
Dame Judy's platinum hair looks carefully tousled. Her deep blue eyes are surrounded by perfectly crafted laugh lines.
Good evening, Mr. Eaton, she says.
I hear the deep, rich voice over the speakers in the room, but also in my own two ears. The glasses must have audio as well.
Very impressive.
Alexei sounds uninterested.
I would like to see her do a cartwheel.
Wayne looks pleased by the request.
You heard the man, he tells me.
I imagine it, and Dame Judi performs a perfect cartwheel.
Anything else?
No,
says Alexei.
That's it? I am bored.
It's Celebrity Pokemon Go. Who cares?
I snicker.
Oh, it's so much more than that, Wayne is scrambling. With Other Earth, you can have any adventure you like, all without leaving the safety of your own environment. You can hunt monsters while you go for your morning jog, or battle foreign spies on the subway.
Pass, says Alexei. The board members appear nervous. Maybe they really are human.
All right, Wayne replies.
There's a hint of desperation in his voice.
Now, imagine your encounter with Dame Judy, and imagine you were wearing a disc.
He pauses to let the idea sink in.
The glasses alone will make the company billions. Pair the glasses with a disc, and we can charge anything we like.
Why?
Alexei demands.
What's the big deal? I don't think you understand, Wayne tells him. In Other Earth, you can choose any companion you like for a price. You can speak to them, feel them.
The horror of it all is beginning to settle in for me. Soon, you'll be able to buy a digital clone of any famous person you want, and you'll be able to do anything you want to that clone.
So, Alexei says, I am a billionaire. I could buy the real thing. You could buy Dame Judi Dench, Wayne scoffs. Everyone has their price. Take my word for it.
The way Alexei says it, you get the sense that he knows what he's talking about. Wayne leans forward, his good elbow on the table.
You may be able to buy companionship, but there are certain things that aren't for sale, he says slyly. For instance, what if you weren't interested in making love? What if you wanted to see what it was like to chop her up into bits? You are a very sick man, Mr. Gibson.
Alexei sounds utterly appalled, though I doubt he's so squeamish. He's screwing with Wayne, and it's absolutely beautiful.
Why would anyone want to murder Dame Judy? She's a treasure.
Finally, a question for which Wayne has no answer. His face falls.
Surely you can see how popular such an option might be. Think of the revenue. No, I prefer not. I have no interest in such things, Alexei says. This meeting has not been worth my time. I am interested in Otherworld only.
It makes perfect sense now that I think about it. Other Earth can't give Alexei a handsome avatar with a nose and a pecker.
Mr. Semenov! You were right, Mr. Eden, Alexei says. These men are not so impressive. Bring James Agubu to meet me tomorrow. Gentlemen of the board, as soon as I have confirmed that Mr. Agubu is alive, I want the boy Mr. Eden calls Gorog delivered to my home. Otherwise, I will dump my stock, and your company will die.
Mr. Semenov!
Wayne tries again. But there's no answer. Alexei is gone, and the giant bear stares back at us silently. The men sitting around the table look shell-shocked, but I'm the one who's truly screwed. The Captive. As my mother might have predicted, my lies have come back to bite me right on the ass. I should never have told Alexei that we'd found James Agubu in real life. Now the race is on to locate his avatar before morning. I use the amulet to join Cat in the ice fields, and together we set out in search of children. Our only hope is that someone will have spotted Fawns and Agubu and will be able to pick up their trail. But so far, there doesn't appear to be a trail to follow. We've traveled from wasteland to wasteland, skirting the realms. If there are children left in Otherworld, they're all deep in hiding. From time to time, we've come across evidence of habitation, the remains of campfires or lean-tos, but the beings that built them are long gone. For the past few hours, we've been hiking through rocky terrain. There's no water here, and no vegetation. pillars of stone rise up around us. We're high enough to see other realms and wastelands in the distance. There's a patch of green that looks promising. It's hard to tell how long it will take us to reach it. Look, Kat says. We've emerged from between two of the giant rock pillars into an open space. Not far away is another outcropping. A wide web has been strung between the rocks. It must be at least 50 feet from side to side. How big do you suppose the thing that built that is? I recognize the handiwork. About your size, I tell her. Let's go say hi. Kat lifts an eyebrow. You're joking. Nope, I tell her. She stays behind for a moment as I walk towards it, then hustles to catch up. You sure you know what you're doing? Kat's still skeptical. She thinks a beast built the web. I think so. If I remember anything from grade school, it's that spiders catch their prey by sensing vibrations in their webs. I pick up a large rock and hurl it at the silken strands. Almost immediately, a creature appears from above, daintily dangling from a single strand. She uses her many limbs to stop a few feet above us. I can see my reflection in all of her eyes.
It's you, she says.
Surprised? I ask. I bet you thought I was still stuck to the top of that cave. You know that was totally unnecessary, right? If I hadn't had the amulet, I'd probably still be up there.
Unnecessary, perhaps. Prudent, certainly, the child says. What would you have done in my place?
I don't know. Maybe trust me, I say. I did save you and your translucent friend's asses.
My apologies, says the creature. But in my experience, guests who save children are not the saviors we hope they'll be. My translucent friend, as you called her, died learning that lesson. The children who've come here to live in my colony are tired of disappointment.
I'm sorry to hear about your friend, I say. It sounds like she might have known Alexei.
She did. Some children call him our savior because he shoots his own kind, but killing guests is pointless. They always come back. After we escaped from Moloch, my friend and I went to see Alexei and offer our help. I showed him how I can disable guests, wrapping them up and rendering them harmless. Alexei wasn't interested. He sent us away. Bounty hunters murdered my friend as we left the swamp. That is why I no longer believe in saviors. Alexei's just like the other guests. He's here to kill. He's simply chosen a different prey. We didn't come here to kill, Kat says. Then why are you here? The spider child responds. We want to get rid of the guests, Kat tells her. We believe other worlds should belong to the children. You may believe what you like, but the guests are immortal. The Creator brought them here himself. They are here to stay.
They are not immortal, I tell her. They're just beings from another world. We can't kill them here, but we can send them back where they came from. There's someone here in Otherworld who will help us, but we need to find him. He's with Fawns.
You've met Fawns?
The creature interrupts.
And you survived?
Yes, Kat tells her. Because we told him what we just told you, and he believed us. It's a bit of a stretch. I'm not sure how much faith Fawns ever placed in the two of us. The child contemplates Kat's answer. She knows something. What do you have to lose? I ask. Either we save your kind, or things continue as they are. The situation can't get any worse, can it?
This is Otherworld, the child says. Things can always get worse. But if Fawns is all you seek, I will help you. He knows how to deal with guests. If your motives are not pure, he will find a way to dispose of you.
So you know where he is? Kat asks.
A child arrived at our colony yesterday, having escaped from soldiers near Imra. She said she'd heard rumors that Fonz was in Karamojo.
Karamojo? Cat looks at me. Why would Fonz take James Agubu there?
It makes perfect sense to me.
Because he knows Agubu would be safe in Karamojo. The guests don't shoot one another there. They're too busy killing the children.
But what about Fonz? Cat asks.
Maybe he's hiding somewhere in the realm. He knows people will be looking for him out here. Where's the last place in Otherworld anyone would expect a free child to go?
Karamojo, Cat answers. She sees the beauty of the plan now.
The treehouse looks as lovely as the last time I was here, and Karamojo feels oddly peaceful. The shining sun makes the grass look golden. Beasts have gathered at the watering hole.
This is really it? Cat asks skeptically.
The lodge's white curtains are fluttering in the wind, and we can hear men laughing beyond the open windows. It's hard to imagine the horrors that will greet us the moment we walk inside. The ladder is let down for us, and Cat and I climb up to the balcony that surrounds the lodge. The NPC who greets us startles when she sees me. It's the same woman Elvis and I met the last time we were here. She knows I'm not like the other guests, and she doesn't know what to expect.
"Welcome back, sir," she offers timidly. "How can I help you?"
"We're looking for someone who may be staying here." I keep my voice low. "A tall, dark avatar in drab clothing who doesn't seem interested in the hunt." The NPC shakes her head.
"There are 5 guests in the lodge at the moment, sir. None of them fit that description."
"Do you mind if we take a look around?" Cat's already heading for the lodge. I reach out to stop her, but she's already stepped inside. I told her what I saw on the wall in there, but I also realized there was no way to prepare her.
"Oh, my God,"
I hear Cat cry. The chatter inside comes to an abrupt halt. I rush for the entrance and find her standing just across the threshold, a hand clapped over her mouth. Her eyes are glued to the wall of hunting trophies. They've added new heads since the last time I was here. Every size, color, and texture is represented. I wonder if Cat recognizes any of the faces up there. I try not to look that closely. There are 5 men sitting around a table, all dressed like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Predator, with olive-green tactical vests worn over bare chests to show off their muscular avatars. The lack of imagination never ceases to amaze me. You'd think one of the 2,000 would show a little flair.
"You see?" I exclaim with as much fake enthusiasm as I can muster. "I told you this is the realm we've been looking for."
"It's perfect," Cat squeals, throwing her arms around me. Her face is pressed against my chest, and I feel her wiping away a telltale tear with my robe.
"Fucking girl," mutters one of the men.
Cat pushes me back and takes a quick step to the side. I don't even see her hands reach for her bow. The next thing I know, an arrow has lodged itself in a narrow sliver of chair between the avatar's thighs.
"That's Miss Fucking Girl to you," she says, a second arrow already strung on the bow. "Show some respect, or the next one's going straight through your balls."
There's a pause, and the 4 other men break out in raucous laughter, just as an NPC dressed in white linen appears in the doorway.
"Gentlemen," she calls out. "And lady," she adds with a touch of surprise when she spots Cat. "Are you ready to choose your quarry? The last party has returned to the lodge. Your hunt will soon be underway."
The men rise from their chairs and follow the NPC outside. It's the perfect opportunity to do some snooping, but Cat nudges me forward. She wants us to go with the others. The NPC leads the group across a swinging rope bridge to another treehouse situated behind the lodge. There are no servants here, and the building itself has a single entrance and no windows. Our guide unlocks the door.
"Choose one each," she says as she ushers us inside. "And please keep a safe distance. Remember, these are the most dangerous and intelligent creatures in Otherworld."
Inside is a giant room that's divided into 2 parts by metal prison bars. Cat and I enter a narrow viewing area with the other guests. Behind the bars, dozens of children are huddled together. I've seen terrible things in Otherworld, but aside from the wall and the treehouse, this is the worst. The children may look like mythological creatures, but every one of them is as real as I am. On one side of the room is a trough where their captors must dump the food that keeps the children alive until they're chosen for the hunt. On the other side of the room is a large bucket that reeks like an outhouse. Some of the children are bloody, and all are filthy. A few don't appear to be strong enough to stand, and one may already be dead. I've never seen such suffering firsthand. Anyone who can tolerate it has no right to call himself human.
"Oh, ho, ho!" shouts one of the guests in a New Zealand accent. "Do you see that bastard try to get me with his tail? That one's going to be mine."
I honestly don't know what makes me walk over to see the child in question. Whoever it is will be dead within hours, but something compels me to go look, and I suddenly find myself standing face to face with Fonz. He appears to have been badly beaten. His navy blue uniform has been ripped in multiple places, and his chalky skin is covered in brilliant blue patches, which I take to be bruises. Maybe this is all part of a plan.
"Go to hell," Fonz sneers when he sees me.
He's ashamed. I can see it. He isn't here on purpose.
"You two know each other?"
The Avatar has chosen Fonz, asks with a nasty smirk. He's another Schwarzenegger clone. "What will you take for this child?" I ask as casually as I can. "Diamonds?" The guest laughs.
"I have all the diamonds I could want in the real world."
He gestures towards the prisoners.
"This is why I'm in Otherworld. I've killed every kind of animal roaming the earth. A man needs new challenges to avoid going soft. Name's Arnie, by the way."
"Of course it is." "Simon," I say, not offering a hand. "You know, Arnie, if a challenge is what you're after, you're in the wrong place. They say the children in Karamojo are the ones that were easily caught." The words make me sick. I almost gag as I force them out. "The real trophies are elsewhere."
"Oh, yeah. And where is that?"
He thinks I'm full of shit, but he's listening. "The Wastelands," I tell him. "That's where they're hiding. Let me have this one, and I'll show you where to find the others."
Fonz's tentacle slips through the bars and goes straight for my gut. I was expecting as much, so I managed to dodge it in time. "My freak doesn't like the sound of that, so you must be on to something," Arnie laughs. "But if all the good action is in the Wastelands, why are you here in Karamojo?"
"I've been looking for him," I point at Fonz. "He and I have a score to settle."
"Ah, then what would you say to a wager?" Arnie asks. "We both go after him. You kill him, you have your revenge. But if I take him down, you tell me where to find the others."
"Deal," I say. What in the hell am I getting myself into? Arnie looks around me and winks at Kat, who's been quietly watching the exchange.
"I'll let you have him outright if you arrange for me to enjoy an evening with your friend,"
he adds, clapping me on the back.
"She's a girl in real life, isn't she?" "No, wait, don't answer that. This is Otherworld. I couldn't care less what she is in real life."
I'd love to punch the bastard, but for once, I managed to keep myself under control. "I have a better idea. Why don't you go back to setup and give yourself an extra set of genitals? That way, you can screw yourself," I say. He laughs heartily, claps me on the back.
"I like you, peasant."
A starter pistol fires below us. We watch from the lodge as five children run for their lives across the savannah. All of them, including Fonz, head straight for the jungle. It's the only part of the realm that offers much in the way of cover. As soon as they reach the tree line, NPCs appear on the lodge's balcony and begin lowering the ladders.
"The hunt has begun," a male NPC announces.
The others rush for the ladders. I give Kat a kiss as I wait for my turn to descend.
"If you get a chance, make sure to murder that Kiwi bastard," she whispers into my ear. "It would be my pleasure," I tell her.
In fact, I'm almost tempted to hunt him down in real life. The golden grass of the savannah has grown chest high. The other guests move through it quickly, but I take my time. There are bound to be beasts here. I hear a roar nearby, and my suspicions are confirmed. I freeze in my tracks. Up ahead, one of the other avatars shrieks and disappears. I can't see what's happening, but there's no mistaking the sounds of a man seeing himself being mauled. I reach the jungle, but the relief I feel doesn't last for long. The vegetation here is so dense that it's impossible to see more than a few feet ahead. I push through the leaves and swat away vines. Guns fire in the distance. Assuming the guest who was attacked by a lion didn't survive, there are now three other avatars with me in the jungle. They're out for blood, and I'm sure they won't mind at all if some of it ends up being mine. I have to let them stay ahead of me, a fact I didn't anticipate. The avatar who claimed Fawns has a big head start. Odds are he'll get to Fawns before I do. I'm starting to worry when I push past a Jurassic-sized fern and find Fawns standing directly in front of me. Before I can utter a word, he whips his tentacle in my direction. I jump back to avoid it, but the tip still slashes across my torso. I have to grit my teeth. A cry of pain would bring the other guests running.
"What the hell are you doing?"
I growl when I'm able.
"Shoot me,"
he orders, gesturing at the rifle I took from the lodge.
"Go ahead and do it. You're just like Alexei. You think children exist for your amusement. You pretend to be heroes, but you're the worst of the guests. The others kill us, but men like you and Alexei are the ones who destroy us. I'd rather be dead than live this way."
"Are you insane?" I ask. "I'm not here to shoot you or destroy your damn hope, dumbass. I'm looking for James Agubu." To prove my point, I push my rifle back so it hangs between my shoulder blades. Fawns is taken aback.
"The guest with the virus?"
he asks. "Yes, the guy you took from the ice cave. I need to find him if we're going to set the virus loose." The confusion on Fawns' face is slowly replaced by comprehension.
"I haven't been back to the ice cave," Fawns tells me. "I was captured by soldiers outside Nemi."
"Then who took—" I stop when I realize I don't need to ask. There's only one person who could have taken Agubu.
Marlo Holm.
I suddenly remember the two of us standing on the porch outside Alexei's shack. Fawns had just thrown his gun down and slammed Alexei against the wall. I never touched the weapon, and I doubt Alexei did either. Marlo must have taken Fawns' gun after we were gone. I doubt he would have used it to threaten Busara's dad. Somehow, he must have convinced Agubu to leave. Marlo probably dropped the gun at the ice cave to let us know who had been there. If he and Agubu are both alive, I will never underestimate Marlo again. "You're free now," I tell Fawns, impatient to leave. Suddenly, there's another person I have to find. "Can you reach the border on your own?" I barely got the words out when I'm slammed to the ground by Fawns' tentacle. With the wind knocked out of me, it's impossible to speak or think clearly. Then I hear Fawns scream in pain, and I roll over to see that a bullet has ripped through one of his legs. He knocked me out of the way to save me, but I can do nothing for him. I'm forced to watch helplessly as he falls to the ground. My rival avatar saunters out of the jungle.
"Two birds, one stone," Arnie quips.
"What the hell are you talking about?" I sneer. "Help me up, damn it. You won the bet." As soon as I'm up, I'll rip him apart.
"I've won a lot more than the bet," he informs me. "I've been hunting both of you. Moloch put a bounty on your heads ages ago. As soon as you're dead, I'll go back to the lodge and have another look at your girlfriend. I figure I might hand you over to Moloch and hang on to her for a few more days."
That last part sends me over the edge. I roll and send my dagger flying in his direction. The avatar flashes when my knife hits his mark, but it doesn't stop Arnie. Instead, he wrenches it out of his neck.
"Thanks," he says. "This is just what I needed. Guns are great, but sometimes I prefer to kill my game up close and personal."
I assume he's coming for me first, but he merely kicks me in the head as he passes. Though my vision is blurry, I see him drop to one knee next to Fawns and take the child by the hair. He's about to slit Fawns' throat when I hear a short cry and the sound of my dagger hitting the ground. Then, my ears are assaulted by a blood-curdling noise. I turn to see Arnie's head pulled back at an impossible angle. His mouth is stretched open, and something large is crawling inside. I watch a giant bulge move down the avatar's throat. When it reaches the guest's stomach, it suddenly expands. The avatar explodes, splattering gore in every direction. My own face drips with it for a moment before it all disappears. There's something horrible left where the avatar was just standing. Two monsters unlike anything I've seen before. Their backs are hunched and the tips of their hands brush the ground. Neither has a face, just a hole in the center of what I assume is the head. Unlike the other creatures in Otherworld, which are rendered in detail, these resemble shadows or smudges of ink. One immediately disappears into the jungle. The other ignores Fawns and moves towards me. The monster's footsteps are heavy, and its breathing sounds moist. I keep my face turned away as it leans toward me and sucks in air. The hole in its head seems to function as some kind of nose. A few seconds pass, then it stomps away.
"What were those things?"
Fawns asks. He's sitting up now. My dagger is laying on the ground where the avatar who was attacking him disappeared. "You don't know?" I ask. I couldn't even begin to guess what they might have been. "Simon!" a voice cries out. Kat is sprinting toward us. As I throw my arms around her, I swear to myself that we'll never get separated in this hellhole again. "You won't believe the things we just saw," I tell her. "They looked like some sort of alien life form." "I've seen them. I watched one kill a guest back at the lodge. It crawled into the guest's mouth and exploded out of its stomach. There were two monsters left behind when the guest was gone." "It multiplies when it kills. What the hell is it?" I ask. "I think it's the virus," Kat says. "A Gubu must have set it free." The virus. An enormous black cloud has risen over the realm. Something big is happening in Karamojo. I've taken off my cloak and bandaged Fonz's wounded leg. He has an arm wrapped around each of our shoulders while Kat and I trudge back toward the lodge. It's impossible to move quickly, and I'm worried that whatever's going on will have finished by the time we get there. But when we step out of the jungle and onto the grass of the savanna, it's clear that we haven't arrived too late for the party. The treehouses are on fire, consumed by orange and red flames. At least 100 children are watching the bonfire from a respectful distance. They've all been liberated, and their captors have been punished. But the atmosphere is far more funeral than celebration, which makes perfect sense. The wall of horrors is being cremated. There's a single guest standing among the creatures of Otherworld. He's tall, hairy, and filthy, yet there's an oddly noble air about him. Even Fawn seems impressed. I suppose there's no mistaking a real hero when you see one.
"Marlowe."
Kat recognizes him at once and runs over to greet the hirsute avatar with a hug. I'm left behind holding Fawn's. It's a struggle to keep my jealousy in check. Marlowe's always had a thing for Kat, and she's always had a thing for saving the children. If we were in a movie, this would be the part where Kat realizes she's been with the wrong guy all along. A small redhead pops up and peers at us over one of Marlowe's shoulders. A baby child has latched onto his back. How perfect. The guy is a goddamn saint. I help Fawn sit down on the ground, and then I walk over to greet Marlowe. "Nice work," I offer begrudgingly. "Where's Agubu?" "At Imra, at the bottom of the volcano. The elemental is watching over him. He should be safe there." "I don't understand how you got him to leave the ice cave in the first place," Kat says. "Simon and I freed him, but he still wasn't convinced he could trust us. He said he'd only speak to Busara." Marlowe plucks the little red child off his shoulder and gently sets it down. "He didn't want to give the virus to strangers. Well, he knows me. Mr. Agubu and my mother used to work together in California." I should have remembered that. If only I had, this could all have been over ages ago. We wouldn't have had to bring Busara to Otherworld. Alexei Semenov wouldn't have gotten involved. The answer to every dilemma was right in front of me, and I was never able to see it.
"Did Agubu tell you where to find his body?" Kat asks.
The burning lodge collapses and falls to the ground. We all pause to watch the spark shoot up into the sky.
I think it may be the most beautiful thing I've ever witnessed. I'd give anything to see the company's headquarters ablaze.
No, Marlowe says. Agubu wouldn't discuss his body. He still wants to talk to his daughter directly.
Kat turns to me, excitement in her eyes. She's remembered something important.
We know where Agubu is, and thanks to the virus, all the headset players will soon be gone. We can bring Busara here to see her father. It should be safe enough, don't you think?
Not yet, Marlowe says with a somber shake of the head. There are still hundreds of guests left in Otherworld. The virus needs more time to work.
It seemed to work pretty fast to me, I tell him. I watched one take down a guest and turn him to ground chuck in about 15 seconds. When it was done, there were two of them. There must be thousands of those things here by now.
Yeah, but each one only eliminates a single guest at a time. Karamojo is the perfect environment for them, Marlowe says. Here, most of the guests go off on their own to hunt. The viruses can kill them one by one, but they have a hard time with groups of guests. In the few seconds before an avatar explodes, the virus inside it is vulnerable. I've seen a few get killed that way.
How long could it take the virus to get rid of all the remaining guests? I ask.
Marlowe shrugs.
In Earth days? No idea. Here in Otherworld, could take weeks.
I catch Kat's eye.
We can't wait that long. We need to deliver James Agubu to Alexei as soon as possible.
Maybe we can make the virus kill faster, says Kat. Instead of waiting for the viruses to hunt all the guests down, we could send guests to the viruses one at a time.
I don't get it.
How are we going to do that? I ask.
Every avatar gets sent to setup when it dies, right? After setup, they appear at the gates of Imra. If we go to all the realms and kill the guests we find, they'll be sent back to Imra. One of us can make sure there are plenty of viruses waiting for them there.
Kat, that's genius, Marlowe exclaims, clapping like she's just invented cold fusion. It's a good idea, but it's nauseatingly obvious that he's still got the hots for her. I glance down at the amulet that's hanging around my neck.
I can go from realm to realm and kill any guests I find. I see Kat open her mouth.
Don't argue, please. It's the only way to get the job done fast enough, and only one of us can use the amulet.
Then it should be me, Marlowe declares.
Why you? I ask, annoyed that Marlowe seems determined to be the hero of this story. Do you really think you're better at this game than I am?
No, Marlowe tells me. I just think I have less to lose.
I know what happened to my real body, Simon. There's nothing left for me back in the real world. You both have bodies that haven't been broken, and you have each other. That's why I should be the one who goes.
I feel like a jerk.
I'm sorry, I tell him.
Don't be.
Feeling sorry right now is a waste of time. I'll travel with you guys to Imra, make sure there are copies of the virus outside the gates. Then I'll take the amulet and start sending back avatars to feed our ugly new friends.
What should we do with him? I ask, gesturing over my shoulder at Fawns.
We can't carry him all the way to Imra.
Carry who?
Marlowe asks. Kat and I wheel around at the very same time. Fawns is gone. I see the volcano that houses Imra on the horizon. We're making our way through a seemingly endless dump outside the city. Marlowe claimed to know a shortcut, so Kat and I went this way. We're following a path that weaves around mountains of garbage. The smell is revolting. I've never wished for a headset as much as I do right now. Kat's walking ahead of us, the hood of her camouflage suit pulled up. She blends in so perfectly with the refuse that she's all but invisible. If there's trouble in front of us, she'll come back and sound an alarm. I feel a hand on my arm, and Kat's face appears out of thin air.
Something weird is going on, she whispers. There are children here. Little ones. Babies.
By themselves? What are they doing? I ask.
They're sitting on a mound of dirt, she answers. It's like they're waiting for something.
A mound of dirt. The phrase sets the gears turning in my mind.
Are any of them green? I ask.
Kat scrunches up her nose.
Yeah, why?
I think I may know their mother. Gimmelwald was deserted the last time we visited.
Is it possible that Vola brought her children here? Marlo and I follow Cat back to the scene. We crouch behind a teetering pile of buffalo bones and peek out carefully. There, in a clearing in the middle of this immense pile of garbage, sit three small children. Decorating the surface of their pale green skin are darker lines that are probably veins, but resemble vines. The children seem much thinner than they should be, and they're unusually quiet. They'd be the perfect meal for any beast roaming by. I'm certain the babies belong to Vola, the elemental of Gimmelwald, but it seems unlikely that she would willingly leave them exposed. The dirt beneath them appears dusty and dry, nothing like the rich loam from which I once saw Vola rise. It's a trap, I announce. There's no doubt about it. I don't know who said it, and I'm not sure I want to find out. What difference does it make? Cat asks. We can't leave them here to die. We have to find a way to save them. Marlo stands up. She's right. You guys cover me, and I'll get them. Maybe he's trying to impress Cat, but he's taking his nothing-to-lose thing a bit too far. There's a line that separates brave from stupid, and Marlo seems eager to cross it. No, don't, I say, but he's already stepped out into the opening. I ready the rifle I took from Karamojo, and Cat grabs an arrow. I hold my breath as Marlo makes his way to the green infants and squats down in front of them, his arms out as if beckoning them to him. The children stare back at Marlo, but none make a move. It's as if they're rooted in place. There's no fear on their faces, and I don't think Marlo's their first visitor. Then I see the soil under his feet begin to give way. By the time he stands up, it's swallowed his ankles. He tries to pull his feet free, but the dirt holds him firmly in place. He's being sucked under. Within seconds, it's already up to his knees. Cat grabs my arm and pulls me up. Let's go, she says. No, I hear Marlo shout. He's not even looking at us. There's an NPC soldier with a gun standing on the other side of the clearing. Planted in the dirt, Marlo's a sitting duck. Cat sends an arrow flying, but she's too late. A single shot rings out, and Marlo collapses. A split second later, Cat's arrow hits. There's a flash, and the NPC is gone. Cat and I rush to Marlo and each grab an arm. We need to get him to safety as soon as possible, but he's stuck fast. I expect to be shot at any moment. If there was one NPC soldier wandering the dump, there are bound to be more, and the sound of gunfire will draw the rest our way. The harder we pull, the more Marlo suffers. By now, it's obvious that he can't be moved. Blood is gushing from his avatar, and the dirt beneath him seems to be drinking it in. The dry, dusty mound has become dark, fertile soil. Cat sits down, puts Marlo's head in her lap, and does her best to make his last moments less painful. Well, I guess this explains what happened to all the NPCs who've gone missing today. I hear the sound of footsteps behind me. I don't bother to look up. I already know who it is. I'm telling you, Otherworld never ceases to amaze me. Todd, I sneer. That's Moloch to you, dipshit, he responds. Where's your Russian buddy? Did he figure out that you're full of it and ditch you for the bear? Go to hell, I tell him. Too late. We're already here. Moloch stops and hovers over the three of us. And look who else we've got with us, Catherine Foley, and the digital corpse of Marlo Holm. Marlo's still now. The face of his avatar remains contorted in agony. Cat's is red with rage. I rise to my feet and face Moloch. You think this is funny? I snarl. He was 17 years old. You knew him. You knew his mother. Which is the only reason he was allowed to survive for so long. There were people at the company who felt conflicted about what we had to do to her, Moloch tells me. If Marlo had minded his manners like a good little boy, I promise you, he'd still be playing the game. I'm about to make Todd pay for what he just said. Then I realize NPC soldiers with guns have surrounded us. I'll be dead in an instant if I so much as lift my rifle. It makes no difference if you kill me, I inform Moloch. This game will be over soon anyway. Oh, I beg to differ, Moloch says with a smirk. I think you've just advanced to a whole new level.
We have a very special guest who's grown tired of hunting children and is looking for his next challenge. I think you could be just what his heart desires. He points down at Cat. Maybe we'll let him figure out what to do with her, too.
Take them both, Moloch orders his soldiers, and bring the children.
As the NPCs advance towards us, I feel the dirt shifting beneath my feet, as though Marlowe's blood brought it back to life. Thick green vines shoot out between the soldiers' legs and twist around their bodies, pinning the NPCs' arms to their sides. One by one, they're squeezed until their bodies flash and vanish. Cat and I tumble backward as Vala rises from the soil, her offspring clutched in her arms. Moloch watches with a bemused expression as the giant dirt woman approaches him.
You were going to take my children.
Her booming voice sets off cascades of garbage in nearby piles.
I was rescuing them, Moloch tells Vola, sounding perfectly reasonable. This guest and his accomplices kidnap children and sell them. My men and I have been tracking them for days, trying to put an end to it.
It's such a brazen lie that I'd probably laugh if there were anything amusing about the situation. Moloch's been stealing children and taking them to Karamojo, where they're hunted for sport, I insist. I told you he was evil when we met in Gimmelwald.
You promised to help us, but you did nothing.
Vola's body shakes with fury, and I shield my eyes from the dirt that rains down from her.
Guests came and destroyed my realm. My children and I were forced to wander. You lied to me then. Why would I believe you are not lying now?
We have been helping you, Cat argues. We found a way to get rid of Otherworld's guests. It won't be long before they're all gone. Moloch snorts.
Impossible. Otherworld was built for guests. Vola and I are elementals. That knowledge was programmed into both of us.
You're not an elemental, I spit. You're an imposter.
Please, Moloch says, ignoring me and addressing Vola.
You've grown weak since you were forced to leave your realm, and your offspring appear unwell. Allow me to take them and care for them while you return to Gimmelwald and repair the damage that was done. If you give him your children, he'll let them die, Cat warns, and the dirt woman hesitates.
Who is more likely to be telling the truth? Moloch asks her. In my experience, it's safer to trust your own kind. After all, who was it that destroyed your realm? Was it one of us or one of them?
Vola nods and reluctantly holds out the three tiny children. Then I hear something crashing toward us through the garbage. Vola's head swivels towards the sound, and she presses her babies to her chest as Moloch lifts his gun. When the black creature appears in the clearing, Moloch stumbles backward. Though I've seen one before, I don't think I'll ever get used to the sight of the faceless head with a single hole in its center. As it charges at Moloch, he manages to fire a single bullet at the virus. If the bullet found its target, it did nothing to stop it. I watch as the virus pulls Moloch's jaws apart and forces itself into his mouth. An impossibly large bulge moves down the Avatar's throat and into its stomach. Then, Moloch explodes, painting the trash around us crimson. Two viruses emerge from the gore, and after a quick look at Cat and me, they hurry off to find their next hosts. For a moment, we all stand in silence. Even Vola seems shaken by the experience.
I don't understand. Moloch is an elemental. We can't be killed by beasts, she says.
I tried to tell you, Moloch wasn't an elemental. He was a guest in disguise, I inform her. And that wasn't a beast. It was something called a virus. It just destroyed the equipment that allowed the man behind Moloch to come here. Now he's gone for good.
You were telling the truth, she concludes.
Yes.
And your companion?
Vola looks back at the spot where Marlowe died. The body is gone now, but the soil where he lay is still richer and darker than the rest.
There is no nourishment in this wasteland. Without his blood, I would not have had the energy to protect my offspring.
He's the one who released the virus, Kat says. And he set fire to Karamojo. He sacrificed his life to save the children of Otherworld.